This is the headline in the news press this morning about Dennis Apple. And Dennis is going to be a speaker at Word in Life on November 7th. He's our last cleanup hitter on compassion. But this is very interesting. He's been waiting to be heard before the Supreme Court, and it is going to happen. He's going to get his day in court. So this is the front of the news press this morning. The other thing that Christina's, or no, I think this is Carol, lobbying us for, to tell you about the Sukkah for Speech, which is Sunday, this coming Sunday, September 22nd, at the Casa de Maria, and we have lots of Casa de Maria information on the table.
Okay, now we just want to get Rajaprana back here as quickly as possible, because don't you all agree we love to listen to what she's telling us?
Hi again.
Hi. Whoever made the brownies, thank you. And the fruit was delicious, thank you. Nice cheese. So, any comments, questions, inquiries?
Well, I'll be happy to start off and demonstrate how to use the microphone. Because this actually, it actually gets recorded. And if you go to the wordinlife.us website, you can replay a lot of this. My question, first of all, I love what you've told us about the unity and oneness of all. But I'd like to see if I could tease out of you some reflections in the Hindu tradition on the subject of boundaries. I didn't think about boundaries when I was a kid, but I've begun to become more sensitive to this word, at least in the Western, environment. And it's being used in many cases where personal violations occur. Yeah. I mean, and there's been an endemic kind of, seems like almost a tradition of rape in South Asia that we've been reading about lately.
I would say that isn't an epidemic of rape as an epidemic of reporting rape.
Yeah. That too, yeah.
It's been going on a long time, especially with the women in communities who have no voice.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so I don't know whether this is a boundary issue, but what about this idea of boundaries? Can you play with that a little?
I think a problem with boundaries is probably, I think, our own... I hear more about our own lack of self-boundaries, allowing ourselves to not put up our own boundaries, then I hear more of the complaints about that guy doesn't know boundaries. Because if a guy doesn't know his boundaries, then you're the first person to say, back off. This is not appropriate. And then you kind of work it out. But when we suffer is that when we allow people to come into a space they shouldn't be. And that deals with our own lack of self-respect. Our own feeling like for whatever reason, like, we need to do this. I mean, are we being martyrs? Are we trying to be nice? Are we trying to have everybody like us? Which is, I think, is a major problem. I'm going to do this because I want he or she to like me. I want the world to like me, so I'm going to let this happen. Rather than it's like figuring out beforehand what feels right and not trusting our own instincts. I think if we really trusted our own instincts, right, it's like, this doesn't feel right. Or listening to our conscience, like, this person shouldn't be asking me this. This is confidential information. Or I don't need to self-divulge that. I don't need to display my family's guts in front of the world. This does not feel right. I think if we have a little more trust on our own gut and trust in it and have a little more, reflection about if it doesn't feel right, then it's wrong. And have a little faith in that.
Yeah. Okay. I have a sort of related question. I'm involved in Al-Anon, and I'm struggling with this concept of enabling and have been for years. And you touched on it. I'm enjoying your talk very much, by the way. You touched on it when you said, when you were comparing or contrasting enabling and compassion. And I'm still having a very hard time reconciling the two because they seem to me to be very inconsistent with each other. So I'm sure I'm missing something. Could you...
I think we always have to examine our own motives. I've had plenty of experience with alcoholism in families and social situations and communities that where you think, oh, I have compassion with her, so she asked me to pick up a bottle and I'll do it.
I've never been quite that bad.
Or I'm being compassionate, therefore I won't address the problem of the fact that she's drunk. Or I'm being compassionate with the fact and saying, not addressing the fact is, oh, and I just had to deal with this with one of my closest friends from high school. Called me up completely plastered. And I said, you know, it's like, are you clean and sober? Yeah, I'm clean. No, you're not. I love you, but you got to get clean and sober. Call me when you're sober.
How does this jive with sort of the concept of taking care of yourself?
Because you have your own self-respect. You realize that by your own self-respect, you respect yourself and you're not going to allow yourself to be used or have your position used by someone who's in trouble. It doesn't help you, it doesn't help them. Then unless you assert your own sense of what is right and what is good for yourself and that person, neither of you are going to get ahead. Now, that doesn't mean it always works. I mean, you can stage, you know, interventions. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. Yeah, so sometimes the intervention can be the best thing you can do, and it saves your life, saves that person's life. Sometimes it's so deep, you know. There's just, and then you just have to like salute from a distance, because I can't tell you how many people I've run into that, whether it's drugs or alcohol. Sometimes they just, you can do whatever you can, and they just die on you.
But you don't believe that that gives a person a lack of compassion?
No. No, it's a lack of compassion to be an enabler and say, yeah, you know, I know you've had a hard life. It's like, who the hell hasn't had a hard life? You tell me that. Everyone suffers. Everyone suffers. Everyone has their own private grief they're carrying around. You know, and I think what we have to do is not allow people to wallow in self-pity. It's like, get help. There's other people who are in the same position, and they would really be a wonderful support to you.
Yes, on behalf of myself and my friend John Liu, who had to leave but wanted to ask this question, is if this is our true nature, which I believe it is, that we have the divine within us, and what all you said, then how in the Hindu tradition did it get so messed up?
Right. I love that. You know, I know I'm divine, but I don't really feel divine right now. That is the age-old problem. And in Hinduism, there's a term for that. They call it Maya, delusion or ignorance, that we all have this sort of cosmic amnesia of thinking that we're limited, thinking that we're individuals and completely separate from everyone and everything else, thinking that we're small and pathetic and subject to death and birth. And that's, you know, that it says Maya is beginningless, but it has an end. It's like, let's say you have a nightmare, and in your nightmare, you're dreaming that you're being chased by a dog. And your dog is running after you, and you're running after you, and finally the dog bites your leg, and you're screaming in pain, and then the pit bull's going after your throat, and you're screaming and crying, and it's like, and you know this pit bull, the pit bull's always been your friend, and like, why is this so? You wake up and you see, and you're breathing hard, and you're going, why did that pit bull attack me? And you ask, you know, you ask your husband, what's with the pit bull? He goes, what? He said, why did that pit bull attack me? There wasn't a pit bull, it was in your dream. Well, our sense of distinction, our sense of not being pure and perfect is in that same category. It's unreal. We are in this cosmic sort of delusion of thinking that we're limited, because Hinduism believes in reincarnation. Birth after birth, we've convinced ourselves that we're born and we die, that we're limited, that we're selfish. But that ignorance stops the minute we realize in that divinity, when we have experienced that divinity, that we awaken from that dream like that. Until then we go, there was no dog. Then, and so that we can't really say, Why did that dog come to me?
Well, it didn't.
Why did that ignorance come to me?
There is, because we weren't awake. Because we weren't awake.
We can end the ignorance
if we put in the time and the energy and the thought. But it's on our part. We have to be the ones to do it. No one did it to us. It wasn't like God said, okay, lights out. We are life after life of not being awake has made that happen. Yes.
I guess I'm at a place of holding all of this and feeling incredibly, insecure, but also frustrated. Mm. I want to speak of the dualism between non-dualism and dualism.
I like that.
And it's motivated by, I may be a failed astronomer, but I absolutely devour everything around looking at the universe and the universes and all of those, that multiplicity of matter.
Yeah.
And it seems that where we're going, if we stay with, say, the Hindu insight, is that non-matter is better than matter.
Matter is a manifestation of non-matter. That there, matter is a manifestation of energy.
But it also is what messes it up. Yes, E equals MC squared.
Right.
So
if E equals MC squared, then everything, when we look at matter, it's not really matter. If we look at this thing, we'll see that 99% of this is not solid. If we look at one atom, that atom, a minute proportion is actual matter. Mm-hmm. It's all space.
Yes.
It's but the space energy and that, currents of energy.
But the energy that's in those bonds,
yes,
you know, is also not just energy. It also matters.
Well, it matters and it becomes matter. This
yes.
doesn't mean one is a manifestation of the other.
Yes.
It doesn't mean that it's insignificant.
Yes.
It means that this world is a manifestation of divinity. This means that what we need to do is change the way we look at it. Not that it doesn't matter. The world matters. We matter. Everything matters. The way that we look at it matters most of all. Because when we create this distinction, then we cause ourselves and others immense grief. Ramakrishna, the great 19th century saint, said that the ultimate divine reality, God, is like the ocean. And that the ocean, some parts becomes, under the influence of cold, takes form. It forms ice and icebergs. So we believe that God has form as well as formless. Therefore, God takes incarnations in human form. God mm-hmm. comes to this world as Jesus, mm-hmm. as Buddha, as Krishna, as Ramakrishna. All these are like the forms of God. In the Bhagavad Gita, it says, when goodness grows weak, when evil increases, I make myself a body for the good of humanity. In every age, I come back. So this is not to say that there is no value in dualism. I am, in practice, a dualist myself. I spend a lot of time praying. Mm-hmm. That is one of my key spiritual practices. Mm-hmm. But I do that knowing that in my heart, God is there, as much as in that altar that I pray to. I know that that altar is an external reflection of what is in here and what is in there. Mm-hmm. That's what we have to keep in mind. The matter that the world matters intensely. What matters is that we look at it with the eyes of clarity and not as something for us to either conquer or either this or that. To have respect for it as what it is. And until we look at it with those eyes of oneness,
We will always be doing this. Mm-hmm. Either we want to grasp it or we want to toss it away. Mm-hmm. So how to look at it, how do we get to that place where we're not either grasping or spitting out? And that's where we come to the practice, that non-duality just means that you and I are one. Mm-hmm. That we have, that there are differences, yes, and those differences have to be respected. It's like Christianity and Hinduism teach the same truths. Doesn't mean they're exactly the same, nor should they be. Mm-hmm. Religions are like a beautiful necklace with different gems. Each one is important. And dualism is as important as non-dualism. It's like, but every one of us has a different way of looking at the divine reality. No two human beings see God exactly the same way. So we all need to have something sort of tailor-made for us. No one religion with one truth can cover us all. Even if we're all Christian in this room, we're not going to see God or Jesus the same way. We'll have our own different relationship and attitude. And that's important, because every person should have her or his own religion, or else it isn't real to us. It becomes something else that someone's imposed on us. Mm-hmm. So that's important. But at the same time, we recognize that underneath is that web of divinity, that enfolding in divinity. That means that the stars that I that look at night in wonder and joy, I know that I'm in there. I'm in there. And that is in me. It's beautiful to look at the stars that way. Mm-hmm. We share that same light. And that's true in physics, too. Mm-hmm. We all have within us the first remnants of the Big Bang. I mean, isn't that glorious? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's miraculous.
And the idea that the Big Bang might be constantly repeated.
Yes. Well, Hinduism says that it is. Mm-hmm. Because according to the Hindu tradition, Western tradition tends to think of time as linear. Beginning, end, someone turns off the TV. Hinduism says it's always going around. It's always creation. There's always creation. There's always creation. There's always destruction. Infinite universes. Infinite creations. Infinite manifestations. How are we to say that God, the infinite reality, is limited to this little thing? That's pathetic. It's like this. We can't. Our minds can't even absorb it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm not sure how to frame this question.
Hi.
If you could maybe help me understand emotions and compassion. I think. What's difficult, you mentioned the different layers that cloud us from that divinity, and when you're encountering someone where the pilot light has shut off and they're not accessing that for themselves,
yeah.
You know, it puts us in a position of, what can I do? Am I just watching them suffer?
Well, here you hear my dualism. I always pray for that person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Prayer is incredibly powerful. It's incredibly mm-hmm. powerful. Mm-hmm. And you reach that person on a level mm-hmm. that they can't be reached through any other way, through talking or through screaming or mm-hmm. through messages or interventions. Prayer is incredibly powerful. Mm-hmm. And it definitely kind of changes the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. When my second boyfriend ditched me, and I was so mad, I was hurt, I was angry, and he had left me for another woman, and he'd taken her over to his parents' house. I mean, betrayal. That was my house. So I told Swami Prabhavananda, and I said, I'm bitter. And he said, no, you cannot be bitter. I said, I am bitter. And he said, and I enjoyed it. And he said, you have to pray for him. I said, I don't want him. And he said, and he smiled, and for her. I said, I don't want him. I hate them. And he smiled, and he said, no. So he made me, and I did it because he was my teacher, he made me pray for, he said, you think of God blessing that person, blessing you, physically, tangibly, hand on the head, blessing that person. And I'd seen him on a Friday, I think, yeah, and by that Monday, I realized that my anger and bitterness were gone. And the funny thing is, I missed it. I did, because I'd earned it, you know, I was so the wrong woman. And that helped enormously. The other thing is to watch our own motives.
I was having a real terrible problem with my dad. I mean, he was completely making me crazy. He was doing what I thought was very hurtful things towards my mom. And then I realized that I had to change my attitude because I wanted him to be different. I wanted him to be like Father knows best, and he was just never going to be. So it's like all of a sudden I realized he's not going to change. I can't change him. I have to love him for what he is and remember all those wonderful things about him. So I went out of my way every time I talked to him, which was I made it a point of calling him every day, saying, Daddy, I love you. And the relationship changed because my attitude changed. I was the nail that was sticking out of the chair. You know, I wanted him to be who he couldn't be, and he resented it. And then everything changed. And I was so grateful to have a beautiful relationship before he died.
Thank you. And I guess the other piece is being prepared to let someone go their direction. Let them go.
If sometimes you can see it coming and you do everything you can, and it's just an accident. It's just like my friend I went to high school with. Mm-hmm. I cannot stop him from drinking himself to death. Mm-hmm. I would love to do that. I would love to do everything I possibly can. I know what a good heart he, a brilliant musician he is. His father beat the crap out of him. His father was a bad alcoholic. His mom was one of those nice wine-drinking women. Mm-hmm. But you know what? If he wanted... Anyway, what can you do? We do the interventions, and sometimes at a certain point, all you can do is just like... Mm-hmm. There you go, baby. Yeah.
You used the word evil. Would you please... talk about evil.
Evil is when the clouds of ignorance are so thick that it's very difficult for a person to access that divinity within them, where they begin identifying so thoroughly with that limited, small, petty person that they themselves are at that point unable to access the divinity that's lying within their hearts. They think that what gives them happiness, because they are so deeply miserable, this is a very painful place to be. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very painful, dark place to be because it goes against everybody's grain. These people were obviously very wounded in a place, very hardened in places that they feel they need to be hard. And they will do whatever they can to hurt others because they think the hurt has been done to them and they're trying to lash back. They think that will stop their hurt if they can lash out and hurt outside. They don't realize that it's just going to dig them deeper into the well. There are evil people out there. There's no way of not acknowledging that. There are people who get happiness out of hurting others, thinking that somehow it's going to make them happier. There is divinity in their hearts. It's going to take them a long time to access it. They themselves are reaping what we would call karma, that every action and every thought comes back to them in the form of suffering. Everything that we do, every act of love and compassion and kindness will come back to us in joy. Whatever we've done that is hurtful, mean, petty, will come back to us in the form of suffering, either mentally or physically. That person will have to undergo a great deal of suffering, unfortunately. They're suffering now. It will be even more suffering later. Mm-hmm. We don't know what that person has had to endure to go there. But we do know that that person will, unfortunately, have to suffer. And the good side of that is that suffering is often what wakes us up. Often many of us don't think about anything higher than ourselves until God hits us on the head with a sledgehammer and we realize that we're absolutely desperately miserable and there's nothing more that we'd like than to be dead. And often people don't look for something higher until they're at such a point of self-hatred and contempt and misery, they have nowhere else to go but to the divine. And unfortunately, they were going to do a lot of collateral damage on the way.
And what we have to do is try to, if we have to encounter them, address the good part within them. Address the good that's in their heart. And be very wary of the evil. We all have to deal with it.
This is going to seem trivial after these incredible... These are amazing questions. But this is actually a sincere question.
Beatles are my favorite rock group.
Well, it's kind of about Beatles, actually, this question, but not the rock band. if I see a big spider, I mean, I recognize that all things are God. Not that that's all that God is. But
right.
There's God in everything. And if I see... I do have a sense of duality when it comes to pests.
Oh, here too.
Yeah. And so if
gophers?
I see a spider, And if I see a spider on the wall, it's not going to live in my house.
Right.
And so I do try to take the spider and take it outside and let it go play.
Right.
But lately,
God is in the black widow. But you know, I kill black widows. Because I've been bitten by a black widow. That sucker hurts.
Yeah.
But
let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
Busy fixing dinner, and you see that scout ant walking across the counter. I know. I did it last night. Because I didn't have time to pick him up and move him, you know?
Right.
But seriously, honestly, I have never made anything as wonderful as an ant.
Ants are fantastic.
Exactly.
They're brilliant.
And so how do Hindus deal with squishing an ant?
And you know, the other one is rats. Rats. Do you know how brilliant rats are?
I know.
Rats, I mean, we have a huge rat nest, because we're out in the country. I mean, rats nest this big. Do you know they make little houses? And they have little rooms inside their houses, and one is just for the poop? So because they keep their own little place really clean, and they all go to this other little outhouse out there to poop. They form very good connections. They're smart as can be, but you know what? You can't let a rat in the temple, because the rat definitely destroys all the wiring. You can't allow one ant in, because you allow one ant, he tells all 5 billion of his neighbors. So they say, hey, there's the sugar. So, and I am basically, I hate to hurt anything. On the other hand, I don't want to torture the spider. On the other hand, I'm not going to pick up. I'm going to kill him as quickly and humanely as possible, knowing that in doing so, I repeat the name of God, and I think that I'm moving him on to a higher birth. Seriously. I mean, we have a shotgun at our place, which we use against rattlesnakes. We have a lot of rattlesnake guns, so they will not allow me because I am so uncoordinated. They said I would blow my foot off. Krishna Prana is like Oakley, Lynn Annie Oakley or whatever, so she carries this thing with a little silk skirt, and she goes up and Swiper, our teacher, we asked him, Swiper Bhavanada, he said, what do we do with the rattlesnake? He said, send it to a higher birth. I mean, do you want to be a rattlesnake all your incarnation? I mean, we're all evolving. So move it, think of God, and think of the blessing of that ant that has come to you. You're think of God and ask for the ant to be moved on to a higher birth. It's a blessing for the ant. I mean, no one wants to stay an ant for eternity. Well, it'd be a butterfly. Thank you.
Bob. Thank you, Roger Prana. During the break, I was talking with people about how I would love to have you give a Sunday homily to me every week because the wisdom is there, but it's so hard to absorb because it's at such a high level. That's why I would like it repeated every week. But my question is that homily only takes 1 hour a week, and the rest of the week we're faced with trying to help or overcome some of these people with the clouds.
Yeah.
And so a couple of the announcements I had mentioned up front were that Maureen Earls is doing an activity regarding something she believes in, and other people are involved in things. Is that the way for us to try and make the world better, is get involved in activities that hopefully will slowly remove these clouds?
I think so. And I think we have to do it from, as an old anti-war activist, I realized that I was so bloody angry myself that I couldn't do a damn bit of good until I learned to stop being angry. That a person came up to me last week at the temple and said that she was an animal rights activist, and what could she do to get people to listen to her? And I said, are you looking upon them as your friends? She said, no. I said, well, why would anyone listen to you then? If someone's really, if you feel a person doesn't like you, do you listen to them? No, you don't. If they don't, you know they don't have your best interests in mind. So why would you listen to them? So until you look as the people in the opposing camp, as people that are nice and just like you and have motives every bit as noble as yours, you're not going to get anywhere. One of the best things that happened to me was being in Santa Barbara Choral Society, where I was sitting thigh to thigh with people who believed politically everything I'd never believed in. And I realized that they were as just, as good, as kind, as compassionate, as thoughtful, as intelligent as the people that I thought were right. And then I started really questioning. It's like, what makes you think that you know that these people are the good ones and these people are the bad ones? It's like, I realize I don't know anything. All I know is that this person says, and I trust her because she's such a good person. So it's been very good for me to kind of get out of my ideas about, well, these people are doing this. And what I said to her is, like, until you learn to really calm down your own anger, no one is going to listen to you. So we approach things that we want, that we believe in, and that we feel are a compassionate, kind, and intelligent way of addressing all the social problems that we have. At the same time, the minute we start getting angry or self-righteous, we lost the battle because we're a pain in the butt to be around.
Hi, Raj. Back to ants and rats. It's troubling within me to consider me being the one to decide that an ant or rat or rattlesnake needs help to go to a higher place.
Well, we all have our own boundaries, don't we?
Yes.
Yes.
And maybe there are other ways to incorporate their lives and ours. Like, is it really my house?
Yeah. Well, when you come down to, let me tell me some of the problems we have. We have a big Sunday school. We have children. We have people walking in. We have a lot of animals. We've lost some dogs to rattlesnakes. We've been very lucky with kids. Hmm. I've had a kid come like, that looks like a rattlesnake. So I pull back.
Whoa.
I've been with a nun who is walking at night as I pull her back.
Mm-hmm.
Rattlesnakes kill.
Well, yeah.
And sometimes you just make that decision like rattlesnakes are divine, but you know what? I'm saying that you're a higher manifestation.
Hmm.
That ants are divine, yes. Mm-hmm. But they also can be very destructive.
Yeah.
So I'm not I'm a vegetarian. I don't believe in eating things that are not necessary for me to consume without causing others pain. I am the only vegetarian nun there. There's others who are carnivores.
Mm-hmm.
That's my personal position. I don't want to mm-hmm. cause anything sort of a pain. But on the other hand, we're the food to other things too. We're food to bacteria. We are the food to the mountain lion.
Yeah.
We are the food to cancer. Mm-hmm. We are. But this is just what we're talking about. Is this? This has definitely a shelf life. So we're only in here for a short time, and then it's on. Then we go back to.
Mm.
Then we either mm-hmm. are free or we take mm-hmm. on another body.
It's better if used by September 19th.
Yeah. Right.
So how do you know? We all have what they call a buddhi, you know, mm-hmm. a higher mind.
Yeah.
We always have to use our higher mind in making distinctions like this.
Yeah.
I mean, because you can make yourself crazy trying to save every ant.
Yeah, right.
So, that's, and that's, I can make my... I was trying to take... there's these cute little spiders I'm kind of fond of. They kind of have like a hard little thing on the outside. And they strike me as kind of cute.
Huh.
So I was trying to save one, and then that son of a gun bit me like the dickens. I went, the hell with you.
Right, yeah.
Move on to be a cockroach.
Well, I think I'm getting some clarity. That wasn't intended to be a joke, actually. I'll take it. It's a struggle for me, as I'm sure with others, all others, to be able to reconcile and move through the duality versus unity of everything.
Mm-hmm. Hmm? But I think so much of what we do matters. Our intention matters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Native Americans, when they kill something,
Before
the white people got to them, was with such respect. They didn't kill it just for the sake of killing it. It wasn't for sport. It was because people needed to eat.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get more than they needed. Every part was used, and it was done with respect.
Mm-hmm.
You were praying, and then while the animal was dying, you were with it and you sang to it. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavad Gita occurs on a battlefield between two opposing armies. And the hero of the one side of the army says, I'm not going to fight. I'm looking over there at the opposing army, and these people are my friends. They're my relatives. They're my teachers. I can't kill them. And Krishna, who is God incarnate, walks in and says, they are killed by me already. Do your duty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So do we tell the soldier not to kill? Well, that wouldn't do Zekiel. Do we want to be speaking? Do we want to have a totalitarian society? There are places where, I mean, if you look at the Peloponnesian War,
mm-hmm.
I mean, look at the destruction that had been done by the power hungry. Look what was done with the Tutus and the Hutsis. I mean, you have to stand up to evil.
Mm-hmm.
If people are going to hurt you or your family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have ticks. I mean, talk about problems. We've got ticks. I mean, if you've ever known anyone who has Lyme disease, that ruins their life. You know, so you have to use your buddhi, your higher mind. It's like, make your choices. Everything, we always have to, like, nothing is ever like black and white. You don't want to hurt, but you know what? I'm going after those ticks.
Yeah. Well, I won't go further about my road rage, but I think I got it.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments, complaints? Thank you.
Thank you.